Last Sunday, we moved our 11:15 service up the hill to Tilden Park. And there, it was just a glorious day, right? Perfectly blue sky and not too hot and not too cold, and we worshiped. And then we had a barbecue. We feasted, this full picnic. And when everyone had had their fill, it was time for kickball. And so everyone who was interested in playing kickball came out onto the field, such as it was, and it was quite a sight, right? We had people dripping with popsicles, and we had some of this crowd really transfixed on this gopher that kept popping up out of a hole, much more interesting than a game. And then we had some folks who I think probably had not played kickball in years or maybe decades, but this is who we were. And so we lined up to get ready to play. We lined up from shortest to tallest, from maybe 33 inches or so to well over 6 feet. And then we split up, one left, one right, one left, one right, to try to make more or less balanced teams. And this scene reminds me of what we see with Jesus and these disciples. They have gathered together, and they are a motley crew. The main difference, of course, is that he takes them all, not just half of them, right? And it's a bit of a mess. We've got a tax collector who, you know, the enemy of the commoners. We've got, because we know the whole story, a denier and a betrayer. These folks are about as qualified for ministry as we were for kickball. This is no champion NBA team, and yet they too found strength in numbers, right? He chooses them and sends them. And he gives them very specific directions. They are to go out and proclaim that the kingdom of God has come near, right here, close. And then they are to heal the sick and raise the dead, to cleanse the lepers and cast out demons. It's a tall order, right? And as we read these, as we hear these instructions, I can't help but think that they are born out of Jesus' encounter with the crowd. They come, and there are all these people who have come close, who need help, who are hurting, who have deep longings. He sees them and sees that they are lost like sheep without a shepherd. And his response is intense. It's not one of intellectually caring, but of deep compassion. It's in his body. The Greek word for compassion here tells us that it's in his gut. It is a visceral response. And so he takes this work that he has been doing all over the land, and he gives it to these disciples and sends them, go, do this work with me, for me. What's wild about this call is that it's a catch-22. It's a positive feedback loop in that we're called to proclaim, to look for the good news that the kingdom of God has come close. And then in seeing this, in responding to it, we are to go out and do this work, right? To heal, to raise up, to cleanse, to cast out. These actions are fundamentally actions of healing and liberation. When we do them, we bind up what is broken and we restore what has been kept apart. It can happen in ourselves as individuals or in close relationships or a community. It can happen in any of these places. And when it does, when we do this work, the kingdom of God becomes a little easier to see. It illustrates the kingdom. It shows that it is here. But how is it that we do this work? What does it look like to do it here and now? For my part, I think that we begin where Jesus begins, with compassion. But it's not something that happens accidentally. It's something that we have to practice. As I thought about this practice this week, I was reminded of my daughter's classroom. I dropped her off at her transitional kindergarten classroom at Malcolm X Elementary School across town earlier this spring, and I stayed a little longer than usual. My son, Sam, was particularly engrossed in one of the centers. And so we were still there when the class gathered together in a circle on the rug. And we were cleaning up, but I was listening. And I listened as the first thing they did to gather, the teacher asked the students to look around and to notice who was missing. What students were not there? And so they looked, these five-year-olds in a circle looked around, and together they figured out who was absent. And then she asked them, why? I wonder, why might they be gone? And they had ideas, right? Maybe this classmate who was missing had a cough. Maybe they're homesick now. Or I think this one said they were going to travel. And then the teacher asked them what they might need. What do you think your friends are needing? How can we send them our love? And so then this circle of five-year-olds did just that. They hugged their classmates in their absence and blew them kisses and sent them their love and their healing thoughts. And by this point, I had Sam strapped into the baby carrier and was standing at the edge of the classroom just listening with my mouth hanging open. And I thought, my God, she is teaching these five-year-olds what it is to love. She, day by day, is helping them learn how to have compassion, to practice compassion as their grounding. These questions that she asked them. Who is missing? What might they be needing? How can we support them? Do we notice? Do we ask these questions? I think that sometimes when we practice compassion, it can lead us into the work of liberation. Creating space for freedom can look as simple as telling a story and inviting others to join. And this has been the work of Sarah Yeoh this year. Sarah is an intern with the Diocese of California, our regional church offices, and an All Soulsian, lucky for us. And this year, Sarah has been working on gathering, creating, writing, sharing a history of the ministry of this diocese with the LGBTQ community. Sarah has been digging through archives, and they have been conducting interviews and gathering pieces of the story, bringing it together to share with all of us. Looking at things like how this diocese responded in the worst of the AIDS epidemic, or how leaders from this church have helped to lead the way for same-sex marriage in the church and for the ordination of gay leaders. And this past week, all this work came to a pivotal place when, on Thursday, there was a Pride Evensong at Grace Cathedral celebrating this work of history. And so many people came. The Chapel of Grace was so full that people were standing and sitting outside because there was no more room in the chapel. And then people stayed for this history panel with Sarah and others sharing their wisdom and their experience, their witness of this work, this ministry. This storytelling is one form of liberation. Why? Why does it matter here? It matters because don't ask, don't tell is still the norm in far too many churches across the country and here, even in the Bay. It matters because right now under this administration, Same-sex couples worry about what would happen if they moved out of California. What might happen to their kids? It matters because overt, explicit oppression and persecution still has roots tangled around the practice of this faith all across the globe. And so telling this story, telling this truth, sets us all free. It's a bold act of proclamation. In this, Sarah is saying, look, the kingdom of God is right here. It's happening in this work, in this ministry. Look. And I think that Sarah knows that the work of telling history is one form of this holy authority, right? It's authoring. It's giving words and witness to this truth. And it creates space. This narrative creates space for healing and for liberation to take place. And my goodness, do we need this healing and this liberation? All right, we open the news on any day and see what is broken, what has been kept apart, what has been kept down. And as we look at this call and imagine what it might mean here and now in this context, it's pretty daunting. This is a huge call to heal and to raise and to cleanse and to cast out. I imagine that the disciples felt just as overwhelmed by it, right? As they looked out at the crowd and saw how much people were hurting, how much they needed, I imagine they probably felt unqualified for this job. And they were, except for the fact that Jesus taught them how to do it. And then he gave them the strength and the power to try. And we also receive this empowerment. We do not do this alone, right? We are witness to the compassion of Jesus. And then we get to practice this compassion. We look for the kingdom come close. And then we get to the work of healing and liberation. There is no one better. There is no one more qualified. We cannot wait for the A-team to show up. It's just us. But we are called. And we are empowered, and we are sent. Look, friends, the kingdom of God is right here. It is coming in among us. How, then, will we practice the compassion of Jesus and together with him lead the work of healing and liberation in this world?